Russian President Vladimir Putin said this week that his country's biggest mistake after the Cold War was that it had put too much trust in Western countries like the U.S., and the West had abused that trust. His remarks come on the 55th anniversary of one of the Cold War's flashpoints. 55 years ago this week, the world came to the brink of nuclear war in what became known as the Cuban Missile Crisis. In October 1962, President John F. Kennedy responded to reports of the Soviets setting up nuclear ballistic missiles in Cuba with an order to blockade the island. The standoff lasted nearly 2 weeks. Here's President Kennedy addressing the nation on October 22, 1962.
We will not prematurely or unnecessarily risk the course of worldwide nuclear war, in which even the fruits of victory would be ashes in our mouth. But neither will we shrink from that risk at any time it must be faced.
So what can we learn about today's international conflicts from the Cuban Missile Crisis? For more, we're joined by Timothy McEwen, a professor of political science at the University of North Carolina. Welcome.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
And many people in the U.S. know the outlines of the Cuban Missile Crisis, but you say that many forget the context. This comes a year after the failed Bay of Pigs invasion, in which a group of CIA-trained Cuban exiles tried to overthrow Castro, and the U.S. had put ballistic missiles in Turkey. What do you think most people misunderstand today about what happened in 1962?
I think the standard view is essentially the movie 13 Days, which shows a purely bilateral confrontation that's mostly about military issues, and it basically explains U.S. success in terms of superior resolve and courage. And while resolve and courage certainly have something to do with it, there was a lot more going on than just that.
Well, tell us what was going on at the time.
Well, for one thing, the missiles in Cuba, like the missiles in North Korea, were not a complete surprise. The United States began worrying about missiles in Cuba, ballistic missiles in Cuba, after the Bay of Pigs invasion. And when the Soviets began a substantial arms buildup in Cuba in the summer of 1962, the U.S. began receiving reports from the island that ballistic missiles might be included in those arms shipments. Most of those reports were dismissed as unreliable, but by the late fall, enough information had accumulated that Secretary of Defense McNamara in particular began to take those reports very seriously. So the U.S. began planning for the possibility of Soviet missiles long before the U.S. uncovered them with the U-2 flights.
And what about the missiles in Turkey, the U.S. missiles in Turkey?
That's a good question. When Eisenhower decided in 1959 to go ahead with the installation of the missiles in Turkey, one of the remarks he made at the time was strangely prophetic. He said he understood that the Soviets, looking at this installation, could conclude that what they ought to do is put missiles someplace like Mexico or Cuba. Now, when Eisenhower said this, Castro was in power in Cuba, but the direction of his revolution wasn't so clear-cut. But after the Bay of Pigs, it became apparent that Castro would probably move closer to the Soviets. The Soviets would probably provide him with more aid. So internal discussions within the U.S. government about the possibility of Soviet ballistic missiles began to happen that spring.
I want to listen to another piece of tape. This is from October 25th, 1962, at a meeting of the U.N. Security Council, and Kennedy's ambassador to the U.N., Adlai Stevenson, famously browbeat the Russian ambassador, asking him whether the USSR had missiles on Cuba. Yes or no, he asked. Here's the Russian ambassador replying through a translator.
Mr. Stevenson, would you continue your statement, please? You will receive the answer in the due course. Do not worry.
I'm prepared to wait for my answer until hell freezes over, if that's your decision.
How crucial was that meeting, and what does it say about how the U.S. used diplomacy to put pressure on the Soviet Union?
I think the meeting became the soundbite heard around the world. It received a great deal of attention at the time. And as you can guess, the White House was delighted with the way Stevenson performed. But this was all part of a much larger diplomatic effort that the U.S. engaged in. It saw Cuba as part of a larger Cold War story. It also saw Cuba as having effects on U.S. relations with Latin America and, for that matter, U.S. relations with all of its allies throughout the world. So U.S. efforts during the missile crisis were as much diplomatic as they were military. They were intent on shoring up support from allies and doing the best they could to politically isolate the Soviet Union.
What ultimately resolved the Cuban Missile Crisis?
That's a really good question. I don't know that either the Soviets or the Americans were fully in control of events, but certainly when Khrushchev decided that the risks of war were becoming high, he became more receptive to a solution. But people, I think, missed the main lesson or one of the main lessons of this crisis if they think the Americans simply squeezed the Soviets and the Soviets cried uncle. For the Soviets to agree to remove the missiles, they had to get some concessions. First, they had to have the Americans agree that they would end the blockade. Secondly, they succeeded in extracting an agreement from the U.S. that the U.S. would not invade Cuba. Finally, the concession that's received the most attention lately because it was the one that was the most carefully concealed was the trade of the missiles in Turkey for the missiles in Cuba. Once the Turks indicated that they would be amenable to this solution, it was relatively easy for the U.S. to go ahead and do this.
I was speaking with somebody the other day. I wasn't alive during the Cuban Missile Crisis, but he was, and he said that he felt much more worried then about the danger of a nuclear war than he does today with what's going on with North Korea. What do you think? Was there a greater chance of nuclear war then than there is now?
Well, when John Kennedy was asked this question during the missile crisis, he said the probability of a nuclear war was between 1 in 4 and 50-50. I think that's as reasonable an estimate as we could make for that time. I just read this morning a speech by the former CIA director Brennan where he said the probability of war in the current situation is around 20 to 25%. Hmm. I don't know whether that's accurate or not, but I do know that there is a significant chance that we could have a war in the Korean situation.
And can we learn anything from what happened in the Cuban Missile Crisis that would apply to today?
Well, I think probably the most telling lesson is that third parties were really instrumental in the outcome in Cuba. And I think the role of third parties in the Korean situation is also going to be critical, particularly the role of South Korea and of Japan. It's hard to imagine a solution emerging that doesn't meet with the consent of those two countries. And I think if the U.S. uses force against North Korea without securing the consent of the South Koreans in particular, that this could have really quite negative political consequences.
What about the difference between how Kennedy handled the Cuban Missile Crisis and made his decisions and how the Trump administration is making decisions now?
It's hard to know a lot about how the Trump administration makes its decisions, but it seems to have a rather narrow set of officials involved in this process. And they all seem to have similar backgrounds. They are either close to the president or they're military or ex-military. In the Kennedy years, national security decision-making was made by a much broader array. Kennedy's national security advisor, George Bundy, was a Republican. McNamara and Dillon were Republicans, too. It wasn't crazy or unheard of to have Republicans in your cabinet then. And during the crisis, Kennedy reached out to Eisenhower and called him up and asked him his opinion. He didn't have any problem talking to both Republicans and Democrats in Congress about what he was doing, and he kept them up to date on what the administration was doing. So in that regard, it's a very different world than the world that we live in now.
That's Timothy McEwen, who is a professor of political science at the University of North Carolina, talking with us as we mark the 55th anniversary this week of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Professor, thank you.
You're very welcome.